And I have the king, our most wonderful speaker for today, His Grace Krishnachandra Prabhu. Krishnachandra Prabhu is a very senior devotee in the congregation of Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir since the very beginning days of this temple. And he has been a very steady support for all the activities that are there. Whatever projects this temple has been associated with, he has been there, supporting not just from outside, but also from within. He's been really integral part of all these projects. In fact, he engages himself and his entire family very enthusiastically in these services. And all his family members are an amazing example of how grihasthas should conduct themselves. And they can work, how they can work together as a cohesive unit in the service of Lord Krishna. He's known in the outside world as a successful businessman, Rishikesh Mafatlal, but here at Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir, we admire him and love him for being such a steady support and an example of his personal involvement in devotional service to Lord Krishna. Most significantly, he is head of the counselor body of Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir and one of the most trusted, loved and admired members of Shri Shri Radha Gopinath congregation. So we have the wonderful facility to hear him today. So let us express our gratitude to him by loudly chanting.
Kumagyantimirandasya Kyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Hare Krishna. So, in continuation of the series of avatars that on this Sunday series that is going on, so today we will be discussing about a very wonderful special avatar. All avatars are wonderful and special, but this is unique, that is the Vaman avatar. It is my feeling as I was going through the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, that actually, maybe it's a little speculative, but in terms of dramatizing, in terms of relating to our, you know, personal life and what is happening in the 21st century of the Kali Yuga, perhaps this is one of the most amenable to dramas we've had, of course, but it's amazing. It has every aspect of what we could, all elements of drama and much more. Can be presented here. And of course, the creator, producer, director is, of course, the Lord Himself. And but it's also very inspiring. Every act that the Lord does, every word that He speaks, it has so much of potency and also lessons and meaning for us. We are constantly told through the scriptures and through the acharyas, through our own authorities, regularly, that there are many challenges and many dangers. And in the Krishna consciousness process, we are also told it's a little paradoxical. At one time we are told that it's a very simple process. Prabhupada said you just have to chant, dance and feast, that's it. At the same time, oftentimes we are told and we experience that it is actually a double-edged sword full of difficulties. And the difficulties are the subtle difficulties more than the gross for most devotees. And one of the biggest dangers in these difficulties is false pride, because that's where the problems really originate. There are other problems of envy and greed and all, but ultimately the basis for our thinking that everything belongs to us and I am the most important, I am the proprietor, and forgetting that actually it belongs to Krishna, it means that we are substituting Him. We are taking His position. So that really becomes the origin, and that has major repercussions into everything, because that's, if the first step is wrong, then all steps, even if you were to do correctly, you get a zero. It's like that. So this is the not accepting and not acting on that becomes the problem. And so here we see that Indra, who is one of the most powerful demigods, and he's also one of the leaders, he, because being in control of so many, so much power, and he's also in charge of the kingdom of heaven, and therefore he is sometimes prone to make mistakes, and he sometimes forgets that he is actually subordinate to the Lord. Of course, we also know that this is the Lord's Leela, and he also shows how he protects his devotees. But nevertheless, we see in this particular instance that Indra, out of negligence, he offends a sadhu, and because he offends a sadhu, he eventually loses everything. We won't go into the details of that, but the stage is where he has lost everything. And because he has lost, means the demigods are very much weakened. And at the same time, the king of the demons is Bali Maharaj. Now, Bali Maharaj's ancestry is very extraordinary. His great-grandfather was Hiranyakashipu. His great-granduncle was Hiranyaksha. So his grandfather was Prahlad Maharaj. So he had the best of the demons and the best of the devotees, both in the same parampara. But he was also a very great personality in his own right, and he did full justice to being the leader of the demons. Very powerful, but also very respectful towards the Brahmins, just like his father Virochan. His father was very affectionate toward the Brahmins. He also worshipped his guru, Shukracharya. He did performed yajnas and everything. So while Indra, who was one of the main leaders of the demigods, was weakened, here we have the leader of the king of the demons becoming even more powerful, because he was performing a yajna, he was worshipping his guru. And because of the power, when they had one of those eternal battles constantly happening between the demons and the demons defeated the demigods. And it was quite decisive. So the demigods were very worried, and they were afraid. They ran to Lord Vishnu, saying that, you know, they were crying that all is lost, you know, please save us. What do we do now? So Lord Vishnu told them that, actually, you can't fight the demigod, the demons. But what you can do is, we can try to save the situation through negotiations and diplomacy. So therefore, he advised them to go to the Mandara mountain. He said, you go to the ocean of milk and start churning it. Use the Mandara mountain as the churning rod, and the Vasuki snake as the rope, and out of that you will get the nectar. This Amrit nectar is very powerful, and it would actually both physically, mentally, in all respects will be greatly strengthened. So but how do we go? Because they were already without any authority, they were out of power. So somehow a truce was developed between the demigods and the demons, because the demons also wanted the Amrit nectar. So they agreed to that, and this also shows how politics works even in those days, that yuga also, and even now. That it's not that they didn't hate each other, but if they saw something, some higher good, then they were willing to cooperate, they were willing to come together. So you can say temporarily there was a coalition government for the world, and both the parties were together, each one scheming against the other, but nevertheless having their own. At least externally, they're playing their part. So they got a truce, and then they went to the Mandara mountain and used it as a churning rod, and then the Amrit came. Naturally, the demons, being more powerful, they snatched the nectar. Now, if they drank the nectar, then they would have become virtually invincible, undefeatable, and that would have destroyed the demigods very, very substantially. So again the demigods went crying to Lord Vishnu, okay, now what do we do? So that's when Lord Vishnu comes in the form of Mohini Murti. Now Mohini Murti, she did not need any weapons. Her main weapon was her beauty. She was so attractive, so beautiful, that, you know, it is described that just her glance, her eyebrows, her look, you know, completely mesmerized all the demons. I mean, they were so captivated that each one felt that, you know, she loves me. And they would do anything to kind of not to displease her. And having them completely in that bewildered state when they were totally mesmerized, she just came and actually took the nectar from their hands. And in front of them, she was pouring the nectar in the throats of all the demigods. So it is very interesting that Prabhupada explains, I mean, how is it that they would, such powerful demons, I mean, knowing that this was really virtually a matter of life and death for them, that they could have snatched away and attacked. That would have been their normal form. But that's the power of, they were so infatuated by her, and each one felt that, you know, she loves me and I don't want to displease her. So they didn't do anything. And before they knew it, the demigods were very powerful, because now they became completely invincible. And then naturally again there was a war, a battle between the demons and the demigods. And this time the demigods, with all the shakti from the Amrit nectar, destroyed the demons. Every demon was killed. Bali Maharaj was killed. All the demons were dead. So the guru, Shukracharya, a guru of the demons. Now, he was not an ordinary guru. As in one lecture, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was saying that he wasn't one of those just gold-creating gurus, but he could create, by his mantras and mystic powers, entire cities, empires. So he actually created some mystic potion, and made such an arrangement where he took all the dead bodies of the demons, and when they dipped in that potion, they became not only alive, but they were so effulgent and so attractive, so powerful, completely captivating personalities, you know, magical looking also. And not just him, but tens of thousands of them. So that was the power of Shukracharya. We don't have anybody like him today in this world, even in that, on that path, because he was very learned, he was a scholar. But he was a materialistic guru. So he knew where his self-interest was, and basically he needed Bali Maharaj also to be in the position of the king of the demons, because that's where his own prosperity also lay. But anyway, he got them alive. And when they came alive, and now Bali Maharaj, to thank his guru, and he also performed a yajna, satisfied his guru, and then they started their march towards to Indrapur. And when Indra saw them coming, when he saw Bali Maharaj especially, you know, it was just a few moments ago he was dead. That was a big shock. But actually seeing how effulgent and attractive and majestic, you know, he looked. It was, he immediately sensed that now we are facing some imminent doom. They ran to Vishnu, to his Guru Maharaj, Brihaspati, who was the guru of the demigods, and said, please tell us what can we do. Brihaspati said that only thing you can do is to run and hide. You will not be able to fight them. So that's what they did. They just ran, and Bali Maharaj and the demons took over all the kingdoms of the demigods. Now at that situation, Aditi, the mother of the demigods, she was very kind-hearted, and she couldn't see all her sons suffering so much. She was so she had a very, very pious, powerful, and saintly husband, Kashyapa Muni, and so Kashyapa Muni advised her, and she then did this Payovrat ceremony for 12 days. It was very tough austerity, but she did it with the right consciousness, right mood, which her husband guided her very well. And she pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead to such an extent that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, descended, agreed, and then actually descended in her, through her womb, to this earth. Now, as soon as the Lord comes, there's a very beautiful description of the Lord. He comes in his four-handed form and yellow garments, you know, blackish complexion, you know, with a helmet and, you know, it's all the Kaustubha gem and all the paraphernalia. And then he turns himself into Vamanadev, the dwarf. Vamanadev is a Brahmachari dwarf. Dwarf means a very short person, but again, very, very attractive personality. Just something which his presence only would, and people would be, all people aware, would be aware that this is not an ordinary person, very, very special. So, they dutifully glorify. There's a very, very wonderful description of how all the demigods, all the sages, I mean, they all came and how they worshipped Vamanadev. Because they were all expecting, they knew that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Each one brought something, you know, somebody brought Kushagra, somebody brought his Kamandalu, somebody brought his deer skin, each one. And that too, personality is like Lord Shiva's consort, you know, I mean, the best of the best demigods and the sages, each one actually comes and offers variety of things to please him. And they honor him and they worship him. And then the Lord, then Vamanadev leaves from there after accepting very graciously all the love and the worship and prayers. Because he knew that on the banks of the Narmada, Bali Maharaj was actually performing another yajna. And he would have been even more powerful if he had successfully completed it. So Vamanadev moves towards the banks of the Narmada. And it is described that as he came there, just from a distance, his effulgence completely dampened and dulled all the effulgence of all the sages and the Brahmins and those who were sitting around. People could notice that suddenly there is a kind of darkness or a dullness, the reduction of effulgence, because there was such an effulgence coming from this little dwarf, Brahmin dwarf, who was walking in like a brahmachari, like a Brahmin. And Bali Maharaj was instantly attracted. The minute he saw, he was stunned. And you know, he could sense that this is somebody extraordinarily special. It is not just any ordinary person. So he immediately gets up. And he was extremely perfect in his religious etiquette. He was a very noble person. His responsibility was a king of a demon. But and especially for Brahmins, as we've seen, that he used to worship them regularly. So he got up and he performed his duties, washed the Brahmin's feet, gave him the proper seating and everything, and said, "How can I please you?" In fact, he said, "Because of your coming, my sacrifice is now complete. So now, please tell me, I can see that you've come to beg. So please tell me, what do you want? Anything you want, I will give you." So, Vamanadev, that's the Lord, he starts very intelligently. He actually pleases, he praises all the ancestors. He gives a very wonderful background, telling Bali Maharaj that, you know, he starts even from Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. He praises them, actually, saying that they were very powerful demons, powerful personalities, and only the Supreme Personality of Godhead had to come personally and defeat them, and both of them, and kill them. So they were benefited. And then your father Virochan was so gentle and affectionate to Brahmins. Your grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, he's your future instructor. He's a great personality, and you know, all your advisors are all descendants of Bhrigu Muni, and you know, you are also always known to be a very truthful person. So he says, so therefore I know that whatever I ask, you will not turn down. And then so Bali Maharaj said, yes, no, please ask. So he said, I want that much amount of land on which my three steps of I can put my three steps. So Bali Maharaj was quite disbelieving first because he said, you know, a dwarf like steps, I mean, even our steps are small, but dwarf steps would be even smaller. So that means he was asking literally for this much land, practically. So he said, you know, you are a small boy and I can see you don't have, your intelligence also is insufficient because you don't know what is in your self-interest. You should be, anyone who approaches me never ever has to think of anything, any requirement for the rest of their lives. And you are asking for this three steps of land. So you must rethink and you are making a mistake. You need guidance. It's too small. So he was a little bit condescending, but in a nice way. Just gently, you know, chiding him, saying that you don't know what you're asking. And I can give you planets, I can give you fame, I can give you, you know, islands, you know, I can give you palaces, so many things, and you're only asking for this. And then Vamandev gives wonderful instructions, not just to him, but through him to all of us also. He says that, you know, if one is not satisfied with a little, then even if you offer the entire universe will not be satisfied. But if one is self-satisfied from within, then one would be completely peaceful. And even if you have to then live under a tree, or if you have no possessions, we'll be contented. And that is true. If you see in our lives, actually, if we analyze, so often when we are irritated or upset or agitated, a lot of it is due to our expectations, and our expectations are linked to what we want. Maybe it's other person's behavior, or maybe it's our own desires which have not been expressed. But therefore, it leads to a lack of contentment. So this is a key lesson for all of us, in which he just picks the key thing and tells Bali Maharaj that the problem is that I am a satisfied person. So therefore I am happy with this. I don't need anything more. So, you know, Bali Maharaj just smiles. It was, he was being chastised actually, but again, you know, in a very nice way. But he accepts it and he says, okay, if you, that's what you want. And he was about to solemnize it by, you know, washing the feet of the Brahmin dwarf and to sanctify that, yes, this is my vow. And just when he was about to do it, his guru, Shukracharya, you know, he couldn't contain himself and he absolutely erupted. Now, Shukracharya, we have seen his power, we've seen what he has actually done for Bali Maharaj. He not only practically, literally brought him from the dead. Not only that, he gave him the power, he gave him the know-how to conquer all the demigods. He was the power behind the throne, you can say. He's done all this. Of course, it was also for his self-interest. But having done that, he was not about to lose all this for somebody's promise, you know, and because he knew, his power was such that he knew who Vishnu was, he knew what Vishnu does. That was his power. You can't even compare anybody, you know, any of the gurus and so-called, you know, people who may show some magic or some power or influence, there's no comparison. He instantly knew, and what he told Bali Maharaj there actually came true later. So he told him that you are a rascal, you are a fool, you don't understand. This is Vishnu. He's your enemy. He's asked you three steps. He'll cover every part of the world in two steps. You will have no place to put your third step. And he will destroy you. He'll make you completely a beggar, a poverty-stricken beggar. Where are you going to give him the third step? He will humiliate you. He will arrest you. This is the power of this Shukracharya. He could see everything. And just because you say you have promised him that, you know, then you are an utter fool. You don't know what you are doing. So, and once he takes everything away from you, then you'll have nothing with you. And you are doing all this because you think you have promised him. Then he goes on to shastrically try to convince him that actually these promises have no value. First, he says that you have not uttered the word Om. So without that, you know, this promise doesn't have validity. Second, he says, I'll just find the he said that you means he has one is that he has taken you have not uttered the word Om. Then I recollect, I get it later. But basically, you are not in a position to. Yeah, if your life is in danger, also you are permitted to walk away from your promise. So there is no, there is nothing wrong from the Shastra point of view for you to, because you are in a difficult situation and it is what we call force majeure in legal language. That now I can't do anything about it. So therefore, don't worry about that. So even from the point of view of the promise, the so-called promise, so what is the use of trying to say that because you're given a promise, you have to fulfill it? Because first of all, you would be finished. You'll have nothing left. And on the other hand, if you are going to try to, if you're doing it only because you promised, then there's no need for it, because I'm telling you that you are in good hands. You know, you are safe. But Bali Maharaj heard all this, and then he told him that, see, I am the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. He actually thought a lot. He contemplated, and then he said, I am Prahlad Maharaj's grandson. You have, if this dwarf, if this Brahmin boy, if he is Supreme Personality of Godhead, as you are saying, then what is the loss? And if he is not, then I value my word a lot. Because Mother Earth has said that I can tolerate any burden, but I cannot tolerate a liar. And I'm not afraid of, you know, losing my opulences, I'm not afraid of death, you know, I'm not afraid of anything else. The only thing I really fear is offending a Brahmin. So so ultimately, and everything is going to be taken away at death. You know, all the whatever we have built and all the opulences, the power, prestige, palaces, control that I have, it eventually go. But my reputation will remain. And I do not want to be defamed. I would like to, if I have given a promise, then I would like to fulfill it. So he gave his whole argument and said that ultimately, no matter what he does, I will go ahead and do it. I'll fulfill my promise and I'll keep this. Hearing this, you know, you can imagine how outraged Shukracharya was. He just couldn't tolerate, because he was not used to not being listened to. That's another thing. A person who's so powerful and so, and he's always been proved correct in the past. Every time, whatever way he guided his disciple and disciple's subjects, he's always been proved right. So he also had a very strong, you know, pride in himself. And now here is his own disciple whom he thinks that he has done so much for him and he has saved him and he has given him so much benefit. He feels this person is so ungrateful. And so he is absolutely outraged. And he says, you know, he curses him and he says, you know, I am telling you, you will lose everything. I can guarantee you, if you don't listen to me, you're going to lose everything and you will be humiliated. Now I am certifying it that you will get. So Bali Maharaj is not, you know, he's just calm and composed. And Vamandev is just looking and he's like a neutral party, he's waiting. You know, he's to see how it goes about. And then, so Bali Maharaj, after speaking to his guru, he says, that, fine, okay, take your three pieces of land. No, he washes his feet, he gets his wife, Vindhyavali brings all the paraphernalia, and then he washes his feet. And then he says, now take. And then right in front of his eyes, right in front of everybody's eyes, they see the transformation of Vamandev. Lord Vamandev, Vaman Avatar, actually starts growing. Growing to what an extent? He grew, became so big, went on becoming bigger. It was beyond their perception, beyond their eyesight. And he then... this form of Trivikram was so gigantic. And then when he took the first step, he covered the entire lower and the middle planets in one step completely. And in his second step, he covered all the upper planets and all the areas above right to the end of the universe. Now these universes are like floating balls in the Karunadak ocean of Mahavishnu. Actually, this Karunadak ocean is an unlimited ocean which is made up of the perspiration from Mahavishnu's body. And so he goes, he crosses and goes to the end of the universe, and then his toe pierces the universe, and the Ganges water, this is the origin of the Ganga, which actually comes from there, and it's actual Chalanamrit because it washes the Lord's feet, and it came from his feet actually. So having closed the two, with his two steps completely saturated the entire, every inch, every, you know, millimeter of the universe. Now when he turns to Vamandev and says, so how are you going to fulfill my promise? And this is the way it has been presented, that the Lord, as in such a form, he actually is quite strict on Bali Maharaj. There was no kindness seemingly externally. He says, well, you have not fulfilled your promise. Due to false pride, you thought you had all your possessions. Now, you should go to the hellish planets, just like your Guru Maharaj, your Gurus told you. Because Shukracharya told him that you are going to go to hell, you will be going. He said, I think that's where you need to go, because you can't fulfill. So, you can imagine the situation. Now, we have to put ourselves in a situation, or imagine what the situation of Bali Maharaj was. Just moments ago, he was the king of the demons, and because of the defeat of the demigods, he was actually the emperor of the entire universe, planet. And not only physically, but he had everything going for him, all the control, the power, all the wealth really belonged to him. And now, within moments, he lost everything. Apart from losing everything within moments, which itself is would be a shock to anyone. First of all, we wouldn't even have even a fraction of the wealth, but to lose everything means completely. But secondly, he was completely publicly humiliated. He was now left kind of exposed. And this situation, what is Bali Maharaj going to do? In the meantime, Trivikram, the form, he reduces back to the dwarf form, and he instructs Garud to tie him up and arrest Bali Maharaj. So to add insult to injury, now here is Bali Maharaj who is now bound to such an extent that he can't even move. He couldn't move his hands. He couldn't move anything. He was absolutely strapped, just like a common criminal, worse than a common criminal. And he was, so it is not only, he was dispossessed of everything, and he thought he's pleasing the Lord. I mean, we must think that he's done this to please the Lord, and to at least the externally the Brahmin to fulfill his promise. So such a noble thing, there's no acceptance of that nobility anywhere. There is no recognition of that. In fact, he's been both sides. Shukracharya has abandoned him and cursed him, and here Vamandev is scornfully telling him that where are you going to give me a third step? And he's got him arrested. And this is the time when Prahlad Maharaj enters. He descends, and Prahlad Maharaj is in tears. He's so happy. Now, it shows the understanding of all the people around. This scene is a very incredible scene where, first of all, Bali Maharaj, at this stage, he is in the lowest possible position, in the fastest possible time anyone can be. You know, we can't go from zero to, you know, eternity, I mean, from richness to poverty in this extremes, and that too in such humiliation and in public, in front of all his subjects, his wife and everything, all that. He's done, and there is, and then his grandfather comes. Now his grandfather is so happy because he tells the Lord that you're so merciful. How kind you are! Here you are. You've taken my grandson. You have shown your equal beauty on both sides. It's very wonderful. He says you have taken him to the highest levels, given him made the king of heavens when you felt he was worthy of it, and now you yourself have been equally impartial and taken everything away from him. So now this is Prahlad Maharaj's vision, his own grandson. And he says that, you know, and he's prostrated himself in front of the Vamandev, and he's saying this. And Bali Maharaj, he has so much affection for his grandfather, because actually his grandfather, as he told Shukracharya, you know, that I am his follower, I want to So even though he was the king of the demons, he had all the bodily strength and perhaps even the mentality as a leader of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, but his well-being, his heart was really what Prahlad Maharaj, instructions were Prahlad Maharaj. And actually the Lord told him earlier, when Vamandev said that he's your future instructor. So now here his future instructor, Prahlad Maharaj, his guide, his philosopher, his friend in front of him, and he couldn't even bow. So all he could do is just shake his head in a kind of acknowledgement that he's, you know, bowing to him. And he was crying tears of shame because he felt that I am left totally exposed in front of my grandfather, whom I value so much. I am not able to honor him, fulfill my honor. So Bali Maharaj's only worry at that time was not about his shame and all that. He was feeling shameful only because he felt I am not able to keep my vow. And it was so desperate feeling in his mind that when the Lord then told him that, so tell me what you want to do, where are you going to put your third step? Where can I put my third step? You have not fulfilled your promise, etc., etc. So that time he said that, my Lord, you are saying that I have not fulfilled your promise, and that I will certainly rectify. I cannot bear to not to, you know, fulfill your promise, and therefore the only place I have is my head. I offer my body and my head to you. You can put your third step on me. So every part of the whole universe was covered. The only thing that he had in his control, though he was bound hand and foot, was his head. So this is really the, you can say, the epitome, the highest form of surrender that we see from a person in the most externally difficult and humiliating situation, when nobody would have expected this, that where he... But because he was so keen to fulfill his promise, and he immediately offered that you put your head on my head. And at that time, there was a huge uproar in the, you know, among so many Gandharvas, demigods, all those who were singing. I mean, they were so happy. Though nothing changed externally, because he was still at the moment where he is, you know, like a prisoner. But the whole mood had changed, because everybody was in praising him so much. Lord Brahma also speaks to the Lord, to Vishnu, to Vamandev, and says that, you know, now see what he has done, and he has surrendered. What more can he do, etc.? So release him. So there was a lot of plea and all that. So the Lord releases him, unties him. And now, of course, the Lord internally is so ecstatic, so happy for him. But to play his part, you know, he actually stretches it to the limit, you know, in terms of humiliating him, in terms of exposing, so-called exposing, because he knew his devotee's heart. He wanted the world to see that in such a desperate situation, when there's nothing, what is really the meaning of surrender? So actually, this is one of the most important lessons we learn of various processes of devotional service. We are taught the 9 processes of devotional service, starting from Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc. So the 9th process, which actually is a culmination of all the other processes, is demonstrated by Bali Maharaj. Who, though he was put externally as the king of the demons, but actually in that process he performs all the 9 processes of devotional service by completely surrendering without expectation. Surrender means that there should be no expectation of any benefit. And this is what it is proved here, wherein at that stage he didn't expect that if I do this, I'll bargain, if I surrender, maybe, because by surrendering his head, that means he was going to die. Obviously, I mean, if somebody who can cover his one leg, we can't even probably cover 2 feet. He's covered not only this world, but the entire, all the planets of the lower and upper middle, lower and middle planets, planetary systems, just by one step. So if he was going to put his third step, it meant that he was going to die. So he was willing for that. So therefore he had no expectation of life or fame or anything. That is it. And at that time the Lord then unties him. And at that time also there were many other prayers. And one of the unique ones was his wife, Vindhyavali. Now, she was such a great devotee, even though she was the wife of the king of the demons. And she praises the Lord so much. But she actually indirectly chastises her husband. She says, that you know, my Lord, there are people who think that they have a lot to surrender. First of all, what they have to surrender? They have nothing. You know, we have absolutely nothing in our possession, and you know, so indirectly she was saying that even his surrender means, what is he surrender? He has nothing to surrender. Though of course he surrendered his life. But she said, okay, you own everything, that nothing, not a blade of grass moves. We can't walk, we can't talk, we can't think, we can't do anything without your sanction. We can't breathe. If you were to stop the air for even a second, we'll die. So everything belongs to you. Now see, imagine she is also the wife of the most powerful person in the world. She has seen and tasted all the success and the you know, the glory and the you know, reputation and the fame and you know, all the praise and everything that comes along with it. And we cannot think what it means to be of the entire world. There is nobody like this today. So having seen that, and then seeing no chaste wife would like to see a husband being utterly humiliated like this. So this shows the glory of her thinking and her clarity of understanding how who the Supreme Lord is, and that she immediately went to the crux of the thing, that this is the Lord, he is the proprietor, and she praises him. And of course she also asked for, you know, you can release him. So Lord Brahma, many others, you know, very heartfully prayed. Because the Lord was anyway going, because he was from the beginning, even before he appeared. I mean, he knew Bali Maharaj's heart so well. And so Bali was released. And then the Lord says, you know, okay, I'm so pleased with him, I'm so happy with him. And then he says, I would like him to, I'm going to offer him a planet to rule, which is the least I can do, Sutala Lok. And he gives him that the planet to rule over. But I cannot bear to be away from him. Now the Lord says that I will give him Sutala Lok, but I am going to be permanently staying there as his doorkeeper. Imagine now there's the same Lord who descends. We are not talking of Vaman Avatar. The Avatar is Vaman Dev, the dwarf like the Brahmin. He comes solely to reinstate the demigods. We saw that, you know, to help the demigods, because they were in a mess. And he defeats the demons. So Bali Maharaj is supposedly on the enemy side. Right? He's the one who has caused this problem. So he was supposed to be straightened out. If you were to just see a script from one dimension, here comes the Lord. He comes secretly and he comes as a dwarf and goes and asks these promises. And he says three steps of land, but those three steps turn out to be something other than what we imagine, and covers everything. And then he gets him to surrender his head. So one would have thought that that's the end, happy ending, because the demigods won, the demons lost. But the reality is always different. I mean, the reality is, what is seen externally is never what is the truth. What we see here is the and why Bali Maharaj is one of the 12 Mahajans, the people who are through eternity, who are being followed for their wisdom and for their greatness and their spiritual understanding, on the same level as Lord Shiva, for instance, Lord Brahma. I mean, Bali Maharaj is put on that level, and was given the as grandfather also, Prahlad Maharaj, but he was given the responsibility of the demons' leader. But in this process of appearing, in the Lord comes here, he brings out the glories of Bali and shows what true surrender is. And in that surrender, Bali, who had lost everything, externally, he actually not only gets reinstated in Sutala Lok, but the Lord is now saying that I can't bear to be without you, and I will be I will be a doorkeeper in your where you are. So in the process, the Lord also shows what a true guru is, and what who should be a true guru and who should not be. I mean, who is not a true guru. We see Shukracharya's example of being such a materialistic guru. And the thing is, as Prabhupada explains very well, that Shukracharya was looking for the benefits of his disciple. So Prabhupada instructs that we should not, no guru, no bona fide guru should ever look to be dependent on the benefits of his disciple. On the contrary, the disciple should be totally, completely dependent on the spirit, on the mercy of his Guru Maharaj. But this was just the opposite. So Prabhupada was very strict about it. Actually, there was one example in the early days Prabhupada was uncompromising in many ways. You know, he would say that these are the four regulative principles and we have to follow this. And if you think about in the early days, you know, in the 1966-67, he had very few followers, very few people were coming, and those who were coming also were kind of just getting settled. So those who were very sincere, they used to bring others also with them. So in the early days itself, there was a very famous band which started showing interest. So disciples were very happy and they told Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, bring them here. So now that band was very, very famous, one of the most famous in the US at that time. But their songs were mainly based on illicit sex and drugs. So the disciples did their best to indirectly tell, you know, Prabhupada as to what to expect, and they were hoping that, you know, he can water down or somehow dilute his, preaching or so on. And but Prabhupada, when the band was in front of him, then he says in his own grave tone that, you know, for spiritual progress, you should not have illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling. So this band was so scared that within moments they just found some excuse and ran away practically. So the disciples were actually very disturbed. They felt Prabhupada ruined everything. Their understanding, you know, go soft, and here Prabhupada came. But the example we are saying is that we are comparing with Shukracharya, and this is Prabhupada, who actually never compromised on the truth. He said, better one moon than millions of stars. So even if just we are not, he said, I am not looking for numbers of disciples. I am not looking at we are having. He said, if I was liberal, Prabhupada said this. He said, if I was a little more liberal and if I was somewhat more compromising in some of the things, I would have millions of followers. And he didn't say it at all as an ego. He just said as a matter of fact that such was his charisma, such was his attraction. People, that in spite of such a heavy message, so-called heavy message when he went to the West, why people were attracted, those who had some spark of spiritual life, they could see the sheer magnetism and the purity of this person. So what to speak of, if he had become a little bit diplomatic and compromised, he would have had millions. But Prabhupada was not like that. So this is one aspect of Prabhupada which showed that he was not, he was uncompromising. At the same time, you know, he had the perfect balance of also being very tolerant. When he knew when he was encouraging sincere disciples or devotees or people who had time, who needed time to change. One example is Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's disciple, who's still one of the leaders today of ISKCON. So in the early days when Shyam Sundar Prabhu and his wife Malati, she was the one who actually brought the initial Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra small deities. They didn't know what it was. They just found it in an Indian store. They showed it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very happy and he immediately bowed down, and they were wondering why, because they just found some odd-looking, odd-shaped deities. And she actually brought one, I think Jagannath. And then Prabhupada said there must be two others, so she got them. So anyway, then they were the start. And Shyam Sundar Prabhu had a background of carpentry. So he carved out the first Jagannath Rath Yatra, Jagannath Baldev Subhadra deities, which went on the first Rath Yatra. And in that time, he was making it in his own small house where he and his wife were staying. So in one room, he was making the deities. So Prabhupada walked in when he was making the deities, and he found that on the head of Baldev, which has been carved, there was a cigarette packet of Pall Mall. So, you know, and then he was embarrassed. He was trying to take it. So Prabhupada said, what is this? He said, Prabhupada, this is, I'm trying to give up, but I can't give up smoking. So Prabhupada never came down heavily on him. You know, Prabhupada just said that, you know, in a very sympathetic tone, he said, why do you let such a small stick come between you and the Lord? And that struck Shyam Sundar Prabhu so strongly. And then he told him, he said, okay, take one less tomorrow, then one less tomorrow, slowly it'll go away. So, see, the person who was totally uncompromising, who could not accept, he was preaching even to the most famous personalities in the band, that you have to give up illicit sex, and knowing that they were indulging in that, because he knew where to express and lay down the law. Just like when he was very strong on Mayavad philosophy or on impersonalism or saying that we are not God, That was another thing when he was telling everyone. People wanted to believe that they are God, and he would say, no, we are servants. Even I am a servant, you are a servant. So he went to the, they felt it was the other extreme. So he was uncompromising, but at the same time he was so tolerant when he knew somebody had some genuine spark. And that is the comparison with Shukracharya. As we see that here, Shukracharya was guiding Bali Maharaj, who actually had such a noble heart, and yet he mesmerized everyone by the sheer power of his mysticism and bringing him back from the dead and creating empires, and he could create cities and all that from his just his mantras. That was the power. So at this stage now, he's now Bali Maharaj goes to Sutala Lok. His wife goes. Prahlad Maharaj says, I am also going to go and settle in Sutala Lok. I also can't live without him, and I would like to have his association. So he goes there. Then it doesn't end there. Vamandev then turns around and he sees Shukracharya sitting there. Shukracharya was sitting in the assembly of all the Brahmins, because this whole stage is actually when the yajna was going on. So it is still, when he grew tall and he covered everything, all that, the stage is still there. So he turned to him and he said, you are the guru, you are his guru, he's asking him. So he's saying, yes. So he said, so tell me, what are the attributes and what are the faults of Bali? Now, by this time, Shukracharya had got a complete change. He had undergone a total metamorphism. He was shaken up by this. But of course, he was very much chastened, and because he was a super intelligent scholar, but his pride was, his ego and other things was, just his own intellect and own mantra ability and all, whatever. So he turns, he says, my Lord, he has no fault. He is absolutely faultless. Actually, anyone who tries to satisfy you, anyone who tries to please you, that is the only success. So the goal of any yajna, the goal of any activity, if it is directed towards you, even though if it is with faults, but that is faultless. So that means if our pronunciation and the mantras are wrong, or if our, we may have some, if our selection of the people whom we need to help, we made mistakes in that. We'll make so many mistakes, in the religious etiquettes and rituals also, we may make mistakes. In all that, if we make mistakes, there may be faults. But if the goal is to please you, then that is completely successful. And so Bali Maharaj, he's absolutely faultless. Very different mood now. So, Prabhupada, in the commentary, he adds that what turning towards the Lord in the Kali Yuga means that we should see that there is no possibility other than in Kali Yuga, other than chanting the holy names of the Lord. Because this is the recommended process Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, whose Krishna himself has stressed that that is the only way we can come to the Lord. So, in Bali Maharaj's example of giving himself to the Lord, and that too, it shows that while externally he was, controlling the demons and doing whatever he had to fulfill his responsibility, it was not that it was just all of a sudden there was a transformation. It cannot be. A person who can, that when the test comes, the test, the preparation has to be a lifetime of preparation. It is not possible that you just say that I'll be able to just say at the last minute and I'm sure I can do it. So this was his deep feeling and his understanding of the Lord, that he could defy a personality like Shukracharya and go towards the Lord. And that the Lord comes to him and wants to say that I would not want to leave your association. So also, just remember, there's a very nice story related to in the Padma Puran, which is cited here, where when the Lord goes to Sutala Lok and he starts staying there only. So now Lakshmi Devi, who's in Vaikuntha, she initially doesn't know why the Lord has not come back. She's getting lonely. And the Lord is seemingly forgotten her because he's stationed himself as the doorkeeper of Sutala Lok. So when she understands now that he's there because of Bali Maharaj and he's his great devotee, so she comes up with a strategy because she wanted him also back in Vaikuntha. So she then disguises herself as an old lady and actually goes to Sutala Lok. Now there, Bali Maharaj, as per his tradition, you know, he was always, because again, he was the ruler of the entire planet, and he was always very charitable, so very generous. So anyone who asked for anything, it was a rule that they could come, and he would spend several hours only meeting people and dispensing with whatever they need. So there used to be a long, long line. So she joined the line. But she would let everyone else go. And she would stay at the back. So Bali Maharaj could not help but notice, because while he was, you know, he saw that right from the early day that she was already there. But everyone would like to surge forward and come towards, you know, as quickly as possible to get their relief of their material misery, whatever expectation they had. And here she was allowing everyone to go. So finally the line ended in the evening and she was there. So he called her. And he says, I noticed that you were letting everyone else go. So now, but you should ask, what do you want? I can help you in any way. Then she said, are you sure? Will you give me what I want? He's saying, yes, of course, if it's my capacity, I will definitely do so. So then she said that, I want the Lord back. So now he was in a big dilemma because, you know, he could not break his promise. And at the same time, he was so attached to the Lord that he just couldn't even think of, you know, having the Lord leave him now. It's not often every day that you expect that you hear the Lord coming and saying that I'm going to come and stay with you. It, even in our dreams we don't think of it. Here it actually happened. So it's understandable if he was feeling I can't bear it. So he was really in dilemma. Now this is another example of how the Lord, of course, being in the heart, he knew. This whole thing is brought in to see how to also show how the Lord not only protects his devotee, he glorifies his devotee, he also shows where his love is, how he specially wants to please his devotee, but also how he finds a solution to this dilemma. So he comes and tells the he immediately understood. So then before, you know, it was like a stalemate because Lakshmi Devi had her requirement, she put it. And Bali Maharaj had has to fulfill. But he was internally going through turmoil. Now what am I supposed to do? So he came and just solved the problem. He just expanded himself. So one Vamandev was here and one Vaman Vishnu went back to Vaikuntha. So this demonstrates the Lord's deep desire to always protect his devotees. So coming back to the... Prabhupada stressed this fact that... which is the core... This is the core message for all devotees. Any devotee wanting to take to spiritual life, is the first message is that the holy name of the Lord, and we as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers have been recommended the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So this Mahamantra is non-different than the Lord, and as it's said in the Shastras that Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gati Ranyata. So in this age, there is no other way, no other way, no other way, but to chant the holy name. Because what was applicable or ideal for other yugas in the Satya, Treta and Dwapar yugas is not possible because there was a far greater... ability and understanding and spiritual connection of people in those yugas. Kali Yuga is a very relatively more degrading and continuing to degrade yuga. So therefore, and at the same time, it's much simpler than doing the austerities of the other yugas, but at the same time, the potency is even more, to such an extent that the other, even the demigods would all wish to take birth in this yuga only because they have a direct access to the Lord if they perfect the process. So, as Prabhupada said that I would like one moon rather than many stars, or one sincere disciple, or one sincere devotee, then I would say my life is perfect. I don't mind if people find difficulty to follow. Of course, he brought in hundreds and thousands of devotees who, people who took it so seriously and dedicated their lives completely. And through them, it has gone into more and more and more. So it is now spread to lakhs of people, or maybe more, all over the world, who are doing the same in trying to please Srila Prabhupada, who in turn was following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada made one very wonderful statement. He said that the fire of devotion in these in the genuine spiritual masters and the genuine sadhus is so strong that it can actually activate the, just by contact with them, by associating with these great sadhus, it can activate our dry dead wood, which is within our heart. So the potency of the fire is within our heart, but it has to be activated. And that activation comes from the contact that we get by just associating with them. When we do that, then that fire gets kindled within our heart, and then our process can start. So therefore, we hear this regularly, constantly. We hear the same message about having, you know, associating. We actually use the word association, but actually association has so many connotations. It is not just the physical presence, but it is actually also active hearing. Active hearing means following instructions, because we may hear on a mental level, but not consider it that I have to change or I have to do try to mold my life. It also means that we try to change our life under the guidance of someone, some superior authority, because we all need help, and it's a lifelong process. It also means that we have to accept and go through all the trials, tribulations that are there in this process. Even if we stumble sometimes, but we should not miss the goal. Because initially we get the boost because we feel that we've heard the perfect philosophy, so we start off with a bang, and then somehow after some time, maybe a few years or maybe even earlier, we start losing the taste, becomes mechanical. So this is where association comes in thing. And association really means that if we are hearing with alertness, we will also gradually see and appreciate more of who are the people who can help us. And really, the because you can, it's not a matter of just, it's not just a matter of getting together physically, but it's more a matter of taking inspiration from others. So when we, whom we associate with, and how we associate, and when we associate, these become very crucial. So for at the end of the day, how do we continue this as we go home, as we go beyond our, you know, 2 or 3 hour venture into the temple, we get fired up, it's a very nice atmosphere. But if you want to do it on a daily basis, if you want to have the steadiness of chanting every day, trying to improve our consciousness, this itself is not easy. But then ISKCON and Radha Gopinath Mandir, of course, offer so many details, and others which are most of you are aware of, so many programs, so many opportunities to interact. But ultimately, you can only take the horse to the water. You can't force the horse to drink. So similarly, we may be given all these opportunities, but finally that spark of determination, as we see here in the story of Bali Maharaj, that in spite of giving all the advice and all the gains that he could have got, which he already had experienced from his Guru Maharaj, he defied his Guru Maharaj because he knew what he had, the sense of discrimination. So same way, if we need to have that determination to follow that path, we will have so many other so-called gurus outside. It may be our parents, or it may be our family members, hopefully not our spouse, maybe in our occupation, everywhere, you know, we might be, because some individual gets the interest and then he suddenly finds that the others are not cooperating. How do we go ahead in that? So the key is somehow finding the association. And if we are not able to physically, books are the association. When we read books, when we hear lectures, when we hear, now that is available to us on internet, it's available, I mean, this technology has been used so nicely. So nobody can say that we don't have the opportunity to improve our present situation, and it's a constant step, a constant process of improving that we need to do. So that is the message that comes out from this wonderful Leela of Vaman Avatar. How the Lord, in summary, if we see that how the Lord shows that the false pride of Indra, it may be kind of the spark which led to his appearance, but actually it was really to show how Bali, who had such a great personality like Shukracharya's guru, still went against that, and how Lord Vamandev tricked, externally showed as if he tricked his spiritual, the devotees and the demons into parting with the, Bali Maharaj had to change his, his position from being the richest to the poorest. But finally, what came out was the glories of a genuine devotee who is a pure devotee, and the process of devotional service, a complete surrender, as demonstrated by Bali Maharaj, is what is the ideal example for all of us to follow. So, are there any questions? Yes. I was sure, that's why I ended a little early also.
Bali Maharaj said that I cannot give up the promise which I have given to a Brahman. And now for us, another side, importance of a guru, we give so much importance here, that two question mixing, and he has given up his Guru Maharaj. And today, who is Brahman? Bali Maharaj has accepted this Brahman. Today, though Shukracharya was so powerful, and he, and Guru, and either here Brahman, so we get devotee association, which you actually very elaborately explained in the end. But association, we want, and we also want to go towards that side, so that we can make a spiritual progress. Brahman or Guru, here, you know, sometimes people say very difficult even to get Guru. Years they have to wait, and we don't know when they will get an opportunity. So keeping who is Brahman, how Guru is such a powerful person, and he rejected even. So a common man gets sometimes confused that how we should follow this path.
Actually, it all depends on sincerity. So if we are really sincere, and sincerity means that we are willing to accept our shortfall, our weaknesses, and also when, because that sense of discrimination would come eventually if the Lord in our heart, Lord understands our desire, and if our desire is genuine in the sense, even if we are not even on the first step of spiritual interest, but at least if we are seeking in a sincere mood, it will mean that we are willing to accept other views, rather than just thinking that this is my thinking and I will try to find someone who fits into my thinking. So, yes, I mean, ultimately, there's also the aspect of if we have to have a karmic reactions of the past, there is also an element of that. But if we have a very genuine desire, Krishna in our heart will actually, with all the difficulties, like Bali Maharaj had his challenges. In spite of his challenges, he came out with flying colors. So in the same way, if a person starts out and he doesn't have to, you can take, I think everybody who is, most of the people who have come to ISKCON would probably start out by not knowing much. Very few people would be very familiar with genuine spiritual life and before they came to the movement. So when they have just come, they have come in a sense of innocence. That means they have no understanding. But then when they're instructed, so our sincerity gets tested that when we are given instructions and when we are told what to do, what not to do, if we start following that, whether we like it or not, like when we are, and many of these things go completely contrary to what we are doing or what we are thinking. So, for instance, even taking Brahmin, I can say from my experience, and perhaps this is true for most, the concept of what Brahmin was very different than after hearing now from the Shastra. Are we willing to accept now the Shastric understanding and the genuine understanding, or are we still willing to go by that only it is based on caste? If I am born in a Brahmin family, I am a Brahmin, rather than on activity and quality. Right? So this is an example of how a sincerity is tested. So if we are actually sincere, we are willing to learn, we are willing to open our eyes and ears, and as we keep modifying our views, ultimately Krishna consciousness, apna surrender to the Lord will come later. But I think initially the surrender of our own viewpoint is the first thing that I have seen. That because everything now, the way we look at our friendships, the way we look at our, you know, how we should go about our occupation, the way we should activate our whole day, everything gets guided. Even our language, even our prose, everything is actually coming after association with Prabhupada's devotees. So, really speaking, if we are following that, then we may have our own quota of real challenges, misguiding, we may get misguided, we may make mistakes, but then are we willing to rectify from the mistakes? Supposing we have actually acted wrongly and, you know, followed, let's say, Bali Maharaj was completely understanding from the beginning, but if we were tested and if we make mistakes, the moment we realize we made a mistake, are we willing to rectify it? Now that requires sincerity, because if we are, rather than fooling ourselves, so if that desire is there, then Krishna will always protect his devotees. But that is said very clearly by him in the Shastra, that you come to me and I will always protect you. So what he means is protection is the protection to our spiritual desires. That is really, it's not that he's going to protect the house we stay in or protect the family's longevity or health. He means he'll protect our spiritual desire if we maintain the sincerity. So this discrimination between the possibility of getting cheated or not knowing who our guru is, how many of us came here thinking that this person will be my guru? You know, it's very, very few people. I mean, practically none. It's just that how the life is revealed to us moment to moment, day to day, is unfathomable. But if we just follow a process, so this devotional process is a process. We don't have to look at the end. We just take day to day, and as we are given the instructions and we are contented with what we are told, rather than giving our own concoction. So as we go along, then Krishna always provides and gives us the right guidance. If we are really sincere, then somewhere we will be appealed to the proper lectures, the proper understanding. Otherwise, there are millions of people who hear so many kathas. So how is it that there is a lot of commonality? But then when it comes to, when Prabhupada was so uncompromising, most people walked away. Most people found it very difficult. You know, they were appreciating a lot of Prabhupada, what he was saying in the West. But then when he went to one step further and one step further, and when they heard that we are servants, for instance, or we are not God, that affected many people. And that we are, and when he brought in the Westerners to the India and saying these are my dancing white elephants, so many traditional Hindus who believed in him, supported him, many of them didn't like it. So you are tested, and so if you still have your own view and put that in front of what is actually put, but there were some people who went from the beginning and they changed their view according to as they put faith in Prabhupada. So like that, if we are following that, then we will be guided to a genuine guru. So if we miss the boat, maybe Krishna will take care of it, it will take a longer time. But if we follow, then it may be traumatic in the short term, but eventually that protection is definitely provided by Krishna. And we don't know how that protection comes. We don't even know how to recognize that protection, because we may be going through suffering, so our mood is that we are suffering. But actually that suffering is going to yield to something much greater, and we may be realizing it many years later, or we may not, but it will be proved that way. So basically, it's if you have a, the starting point would be our sincerity to just of what we are attempting to do. If you start with the first step, we're ignorant, We come here, we don't know. But when we hear and we come across genuine people, we see someone who really appeals to us and for the right reasons. When we hear, and we have always been told that, you know, if we hear the scriptures, if that is matched by the people who speak, that means the sadhu speaks the same thing as the shastra, and the ancestor, I mean the parampara is also saying the same thing. So guru, sadhu and shastra, if all are saying, then it's not a sentimental matter of saying that this person is a very eloquent speaker and therefore I like him, or he looks very nice. There's no, not physical charisma. But if we see that this person is actually presenting the shastra, I'm hearing this, I'm reading it the same way, and consistently over many years, then our sincerity leads us to become more interested. And we may have problems with our practical difficulties, but nevertheless, we will not leave this, the what we have. And that way, then Krishna will give us the opportunity to come across someone who can then take us further. And that's why we say that, how is it that we got this opportunity? We just say it's causeless mercy. For most people who take to spiritual life, it's clear to see that there's no strong desire, and yet we have been given this opportunity. How we came, why we came, nobody can explain. So we can see how kind Krishna is. So just if you're sincere, he'll take care. Any other questions? Hare Krishna. Thank you. Who will leave the kitchen? So we'll have some kirtan now. Mm-hmm.